Welcome one and all to another episode here at the Damage Report. I'm going to need you to all take it easy. You're in good hands. Not these. These are mediocre at best. We've got a true pro, a true professional. Anna Kasparian joins us on the Damage Report. How's it going, Anna?
Pretty good. It's going pretty well. You know, feeling myself. Looking forward to the show.
Nice. We're looking forward to it too. I am sure that longtime viewers of either this show or of the network could fill in all the blanks by themselves. If I could, I would have Anna on literally every week, but I can't. She's got too much to do. So it is always a special treat when Anna is able to join us. I always look forward to these shows. So thank you, Anna, for being here.
Thank you, John. And to be fair, doing your show gives me a good excuse to miss our morning production meeting. So I'm happy to be here.
You get to just slide by on this show. Over in Twitch, really chill guys, like, who is this lady? Shut up, Jorbo, you know who it is. Anyway.
What's up, Jordan?
He's just joking around. But anyway, thank you everybody for being here. Glad to have you here on this auspicious day of the news. We've got a lot to talk about, including the possible end of the world. Some in right-wing Russian media saying it's inevitable at this point. So just look forward to it. You'll get to go to heaven. How exciting is that? We will dive into the truth of shadow banning. And also, what was it that tipped the balance for Donald Trump to cast his endorsement for JD Vance? It is as stupid and petty and gross as anything I've ever read about in politics. So we'll have that for you too. And then a whole bunch more besides. So I'm gonna need you to all buckle up, hold on to your butts as we launch into this. And along the way, if you're on a platform that allows for things like liking and sharing, now would be a great time to do that so people know we're live. And if you wanna send us tweets, comments, super chats, all that, we will respond as we go. But with all that said, Anna Kasparian, are you ready to talk about some news?
I'm always ready, John. Let's do it.
Always ready. Okay, well, I'm ready just right now, so we should probably strike while the iron's hot with this.
Мы проигрываем на Украине, или начинается третья мировая. Лично я считаю наиболее реалистичным путь третьей мировой. Ну потому что зная нас, зная нашего руководителя Путина Владимира Владимировича, вот самое невероятное, что в конце концов все это закончится ядерным ударом, мне представляется все же более вероятным, чем вот такое развитие событий. К ужасу моему, с одной стороны, с другой стороны, к пониманию, что, ну что, значит так. Знаешь, меня...
Но мы-то в рай.
Да. Меня...
Они просто...
So that is one of these ongoing commentaries of the Russian invasion of Ukraine that we've been able to witness going on Russian state TV. And there you have mostly a commentary by Margarita Simonyan, editor of RT, saying that, you know, knowing Putin, maybe we win, maybe we lose, maybe World War III. That seems more likely, nuclear apocalypse. But she did acknowledge, on the one hand, that's horrible. On the other hand, we could go to heaven and they'd all croak. So Anna, that's an exciting take on what might happen. Totally needless war, never needed to start, and they could pull out literally anytime they want. But maybe it leads to the annihilation of all human life. What's the worst that could happen? We get to meet God.
Right. I mean, look, all we can really do is speculate about what the real intent is here, right? Are they bluffing? Is this part of the campaign to essentially persuade Western powers to avoid really getting involved in a direct conflict with Russia? I think that's definitely part of the equation. But the other part of the equation really makes me question so many political theories that I think you also learned about when we were in grad school for poli-sci, which is the rational actor theory.
Sure.
And I mean, I think what we've seen from Vladimir Putin is a lot of irrational action, certainly with the decision to invade Ukraine, the inability to garner accurate intel from his own intelligence community, always wanting to hear what he wants to hear and how that has led to all sorts of irrational actions. And so I don't know what to make of this. I mean, obviously, there's a part of me that wants to panic because we've seen Putin carry out things that genuinely I didn't think he would carry out. Because again, they're irrational for his own purposes. But at this point, I don't know what to make of that. I don't want to panic, but at the same time, would they use a nuclear weapon? I mean, it's not like there hasn't ever been the use of nuclear weapons in the past. Of course, the United States has used nuclear weapons, so it's not that far-fetched.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to freak out either. But maybe just for a moment. Ah, yeah. No, it is scary. We should be scared at the prospect of literally everyone on the planet dying. It is always weird when people in politics and media don't think that that's a big deal. You know, when Ted Cruz back in 2016 joked about nuking the Middle East, just carpet bombing entire regions of the world. All of this is crazy talk, and no one should be given an ounce of power who believes these things. Now, there is some real world stuff potentially underlying some of these conversations going on in Russian state media. The conversation you just saw and one that we played earlier this week comes after Russia successfully test launched its latest nuclear missile, the Sarmat-2, the Satan-2. Anyway, it can strike anywhere on Earth, and Putin at least says that it can't be stopped by any current missile defenses. But you know, he also thought that he'd take over Ukraine in 2 or 3 days, so who knows what's true. Anyway, he warned just yesterday that if any other country intervenes in Ukraine, Russia will spawn with quote, instruments nobody else can boast of, and we will use them if we have to. And he has been repeatedly from the beginning, occasionally referencing nuclear weapons, using the N word, as Donald Trump says. Now, this could be a strategy, of course, Anna. It could be that the only thing they can realistically do to stop the flow of aid in money, weapons, material, stuff like that, is to make people terrified that it could result in nuclear annihilation. So he makes his comments, and he has 100% control over literally everything every person that video says or does at pain of death. So it could just be a coordinated strategy to try to scare us, but it is also objectively scary, so we have to balance those things.
You're exactly right. I mean, that's exactly how I feel about this whole situation. I do think that this is all the nuclear weapons talk serves as a deterrent. And to be fair, there are certain things that the US government has refused to do because of the fact that Russia has nuclear weapons. So these nuclear weapons do in fact serve as a deterrent. But what I've been very curious about is how does the United States determine what, like how far they can go before Russia considers the United States engaging in a direct conflict with, you know, its government? And it's just question. Interesting. Yeah, because I mean, look, there's a story out today indicating that President Joe Biden is going to solicit $30 billion for Ukrainian aid from Congress. And I have a lot of mixed feelings about that. Of course, I feel terrible for the people of Ukraine, but I just see how easily the government just, you know, shells out the cash for a different country that's dealing with an invasion. And, you know, got a lot of people in this country that are suffering and struggling. So I just want to draw a little bit of attention to that. But yeah, how does Vladimir Putin see all of this weaponry flow into Ukraine from the United States defense industry and think like, oh no, they haven't crossed the line yet. They're not engaging in this war. Of course we are. It's not the same as implementing a no-fly zone, which would mean that we would be in a direct military conflict. But we're offering a lot of assistance to Ukraine. And I think the rhetoric that we're seeing from Russian state TV is meant to deter that behavior from continuing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's look, we've all had to try to learn where those lines are drawn as we watch this conflict unfold over, you know, 2 months now at this point. For me, I would have guessed that literally sending over hundreds of armored vehicles, that seems like you're pretty involved, but I guess that doesn't cross the line. I don't know. Not even training them on the weapons, but outside of Ukraine. So if you take them over a national border, which is just imaginary, and you train them, that's not involved. If we send in the US troops to Ukraine to train them, that is involved. It's a weird thing. And so I think they're all trying to figure it out because look, as much as Russian state media is being paid to convince you like Putin's a crazy guy, you don't know what he could do. He can nuke y'all like in a minute. Putin also probably doesn't want to be killed in a nuclear strike, a retaliatory strike that would instantly come if they did that. So we do have to bear that in mind. That said, it is difficult to predict what he's going to do because he has made some really stupid self-destructive moves as of late. So bear all that in mind. Really fast though, I want to give you an idea of, we play occasional clips like we did today. There's a lot of other commentary going on. So on The Evening with Vladimir Solovyov, which I catch every evening, he lamented the West's refusal to heed the Kremlin's current warning, saying if they decide to support Ukraine, even though Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov told them this could lead to World War III, nothing will stop them. they've decided to play it big. These are the bastards with no morals. Well, you know, it's easy to throw stones, but your soldiers are executing, you know, prisoners. So, you know, there's some immorality going on all sides. They talked about striking the UK. So destroy the centers where they're loading the arms so they can't be sent. That's pretty direct. That wasn't enough for the deputy dean of world politics at Moscow State University, who said, well, if we're going to strike the West, then we need to strike Washington. We need to bomb Washington to stop them from sending these weapons. And during this, I guess, I don't know, to get the viewers hot or whatever, they just showed constant close-up photographs of dead Ukrainian servicemen. Because if you show enough photos of dead Ukrainian servicemen, then you can perhaps confuse people in Russia so that they don't realize that you've already lost over 15,000 soldiers. So I guess that's the strategy, Anna.
Right. I mean, showing the, you know, dead Ukrainians is meant to deceive the public into thinking that the war is going really, really well for Russia and that Vladimir Putin isn't an incredibly incompetent authoritarian leader who has done all sorts of things that have not worked out the way he planned. I mean, he genuinely thought that they would invade Ukraine and the war would be over within a few days, that Vladimir Zelensky would just hand over the country to Vladimir Putin. It didn't play out that way. But the problem is the people of Russia aren't getting that information. There are some people who are smart enough to, let's say, download a VPN to access information that's been blocked by the Russian state. But for the most part, the public has been deceived into thinking that this was a worthy war, that Russia is not the aggressor here, that Ukrainians are the aggressors. It's pretty incredible how effective this propaganda campaign has been.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they have a lot of control. The first charges are being rolled out against some of the soldiers that have been alleged by the Ukrainian government to have participated in the torture mistreatment of civilians in Ukraine. Just earlier today, actually, criminal charges came out against 10 Russian soldiers that are said to have been involved in the torture of civilians, specifically in what happened in Bucha. Now, we know that there were massacres and there was things like this in a lot of different places, but that's what we have so far. There was a Facebook post by the Ukraine's general prosecutor saying there had been charges made against soldiers from the 64th Separate Motor Rifle Brigade, including sergeants, privates, and corporals. And the reason that we let you know about the specific one is that that is a particular motor rifle brigade that had been honored by Vladimir Putin earlier this month. He gave them the honorary title of Guards for Mass Heroism. Now, she is saying that that is proof that Vladimir Putin knew what they were doing, or at the very least approves of what they were doing. Putin and the Russian government says, no. They have been lied about, these soldiers. They didn't do any of these things. They didn't, you know, like handcuff people and then shoot them in the back of the head or anything like that. They didn't literally rob them as they fled the area and all that. And thus they need to be honored because they've been the targets of foreign propaganda. I can't say for sure which it is, Anna. I have suspicions, but what do you think?
Right. I mean, listen, I think that it's smart to be cautious with any narrative coming from either side, including what we hear from the Ukrainian government, because they have their own interests. And oftentimes, some of the propaganda we get from the Ukrainian side is meant to bolster the, you know, requests that they have for more weaponry and all that. I want to give that caveat before I say, I mean, I definitely don't trust anything coming from the Russian state. They've lied. We've seen the kind of brutality that they've carried out toward Ukrainian civilians when there have been, I mean, like a perfect example is the maternity ward bombing that happened relatively early on in the war and how they tried to play it off as nothing more than a false flag operation. This is part of Russia's playbook. We saw it carried out in Syria. I really wish the American left was a little more savvy in rejecting the narrative that we heard from Russia in regard to chemical weapons in Syria. But nonetheless, we're seeing that same propaganda being carried out in Ukraine, and I'm not buying any of it. At the same time though, obviously be cautious with narratives coming from the other side as well. I usually like to rely on, you know, third party analysts who have hard data to share to give us a real idea of what's happening on the ground.
Exactly. Yeah. And look, you try to get information from as many sources as possible. You try to provide caveats, as we have done, I don't know, 1,000 times through the course of this conflict. Nobody ever acknowledges it. Hit the other side. If we ever got anything wrong, despite all the caveats and tell people to constantly use grains of salt, they would immediately said, no, they presented it as probably, they were hysterical about it. No, we're trying to, we are trying to understand what's going on, and also trying to make sure that other people know it's a collaborative, ongoing, evolving process. One thing that is going on though, so bear this in mind, is that the White House has unveiled a new proposal. Now, as part of some of the aid that we were talking about earlier that Anna mentioned, the federal government is going to be allowed to sell assets seized from Russian oligarchs over the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine and use the proceeds from that to fund some of the military and humanitarian aid to Ukraine, including provisions in this that would streamline the process for seizing the assets, expand the assets subject to seizure, and clamp down on certain sanction evasion loopholes. Now, that's, I could potentially see how, well, you could potentially go too far, and not all Russian oligarchs have very close ties to Vladimir Putin. Not all of them support the invasion. So there's some particular concerns there, but also it feels to me, Anna, to be like a little bit convenient. Like a lot of money is gonna go towards this, towards supporting Ukraine, which, look, I get it. You know, shop TYT, I believe in supporting Ukraine. We have from the very beginning. But it also, this feels to me like, oh, well, so don't even worry about it. Like, we're paying for it by selling the assets. But are you? What percentage of that is it gonna pay for? I'm not even saying you have to. I believe that if there's a good thing that the government should be spending money on, my first concern is not, oh God, how are we gonna pay for it? That is generally used by people opportunistically to stop things from being done. That said, don't pretend to me that the yacht you're gonna sell that's gonna fund 0.1% of this is a significant contributor. I don't know, what do you think, Anna?
I think Biden has requested another $30 billion from Congress to help fund weaponry and support for Ukraine. That's what I think. I don't think, I know, that's a fact. That is what the president of the United States has done. And I have no doubt in my mind that Congress will appropriate that money. And what's so incredibly frustrating about it, look, I don't care about the assets that oligarchs from Russia own, have at it, seize them, sell them, have a great time, okay? Those assets are not going to make up for the fact that we're taking US taxpayer money to the tune of tens of billions of dollars and funneling it to a war. Now, my views on this are a little conflicted, so let me try to get more nuanced in regard to what I mean. We promised to provide security for Ukraine when they agreed to give up their nuclear weapons. So the United States has a commitment to Ukraine. I think that commitment is important, because if we don't carry out that commitment, it messages to the rest of the world that if you agree to give up your nuclear arsenal and the United States promises to provide security in exchange, you can't trust the United States, keep your nuclear weapons. And to be sure, through this war, what Ukraine and the rest of the world has really come to understand is you should have nuclear weapons. It serves as a deterrent. And I don't like that message. I would like to see nuclear disarmament. With that said, I'm not going to pretend as if this crisis is not being used as another profit-making avenue for defense contractors.
Yeah.
So pointing to the sale of Russian oligarch assets as a way of helping to pay for this is ridiculous. It's a drop in the bucket. And at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're sending the weapons inventory that we have in the United States to Ukraine. And the money that we're appropriating is actually going to defense contractors to replenish that arsenal in the United States. That's what's really going on.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. And we can, you know, on some level, like the end result, but still have a problem with it. Like, not everything is super clean. We don't know. And by the way, we fully understand that the way that you make a ton of money and get a massive audience in this field is to present a purposefully oversimplified, unrealistic portrayal of the world that never provides any cognitive dissonance whatsoever for your audience. But that's not how the real world works. So we are legitimately and, you know, in an ongoing fashion, grappling with complexity and nuance. Not everything is perfect. That said, I would like to see a small change this program. Yes, sell some of them, sell some of them. But I think you can do a lot of good with a few of them too. I think you should take two of the yachts and offer one each to Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. I think that we should convert one over to be operated fully on coal. I know it's inefficient, these massive expensive things, but I think he would really get a kick out of it. The other we could outfit with a massive wine rack, hundreds of varieties of rosé, and a wig rack too. And if we could win them over, they do have to give up their seats, but the whole thing has been just to get yachts anyway. So let's expedite the process and get them on yachts. And then maybe we can do some good.
You forget that Joe Manchin already has a yacht. And why would he agree to that deal when his position of power allows him to continue enriching himself through trading individual stocks with insider information? You know, obviously continuing his very lucrative coal business where he's bringing in $500,000 a year from that alone. I mean, Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, Congress and essentially working as a government official has become incredibly lucrative because of how loose the regulations are when it comes to insider trading. So have at it.
You are right on the substance, but I will say Joe Manchin does have a yacht, but I would classify it as a yacht. It's a houseboat. These are yachts, like jazz finger. These are really fancy yachts. I think we might be able to win him over for one of these. You could dock his yacht in these yachts.
Yeah, they're essentially mini cruise ships. Like they're kind of incredible. Yeah,
they are. Yeah, I'll take one too. Okay, anyway, I get seasick. It would be a terrible idea. Everybody is asking about Charlie. Constantly.
At some point during the show, you guys will probably hear him bark because he doesn't usually bark until I'm doing the show from home. Then he barks.
Yeah. He just wants to have his voice be heard. Don't censor him, okay? Do you not get the shifting winds? Elon Musk is not going to stand for that anymore. Anyway, with that said, he does. Free speech for dogs. Okay, with that said, we're going to jump into some news. Let's take a look at this.
In just 2 days, Donald Trump Jr., magically, he got 200,000 new followers. That is a roughly 2,000% increase daily. Wow. It's almost as if Twitter employees lifted a broad anti-conservative, anti-Trump shadow ban, which we all knew was taking place anyway, in an effort to cover their tracks before the new boss takes over. Now, Twitter claims that there's nothing nefarious at play here, but they've said that all before.
Yes, they have said that before, and we're going to actually show you the evidence for why they said that before. But we need to jump into this because Sean Hannity is doing there what several Republicans, including Don Jr., have been doing throughout this week. So Elon Musk buys Twitter, implying that if this actually goes through, and there's no reason to assume that it will because Elon Musk is one of the biggest, most prolific liars in the country, that it is going to become a right-wing hellhole. And so right-wingers plausibly and presumably are now signing up for it. They've been told this is now a place it's going to be for you. But Sean Hannity, Don Jr. and others have to imply, well, no, it couldn't possibly be that new people are signing up and they happen to be right wingers. This has to be the result of Twitter finally getting rid of their shadow ban that has never been demonstrated. In fact, we'll show you the evidence that goes in the opposite direction. And that is what? Instantly producing new followers for them. There's no argument being made here, except an argument about how they think about the world. They will never accept that Twitter was not biased against them. They have to believe that because it is incredibly popular for them to present themselves as victims. They want to believe that they are simultaneously always right, always powerful, always strong, and always victimized by literally everyone. And so they are projecting their fears that if Elon Musk does take over, he's not going to be able to demonstrate any sort of shadow banning because it doesn't exist. So what they're doing is having their cake before it's even been made. He isn't even in control, and they already get to imply that no matter what happens, the fact that new people have come on is proof that the shadow banning existed. So if Elon does take over, and if no evidence of shadow banning is ever presented, they've already gotten everything out of this that they want to, Anna, and it is utterly pathetic.
I thought shadow banning meant that you still have an account, but your tweets just don't show up in people's feeds. So
I have no idea. It means whatever it needs to at any given moment, Anna.
Listen, This is such a bubble because normal people, the vast majority of people who live in this country and live in this world, aren't even active on Twitter. So I just like these conversations about like, ooh, shadow bans and follower counts and whatever, it doesn't resonate with normal people, okay? Normal people don't care. I barely even care. So when the announcement was made this week, a bunch of people on the left, prominent leftists, and all they lost a bunch of followers, right? People on the broader left, you know, Democrats like Obama, for instance, lost 300,000 followers, which seems excessive, right? Mm-hmm. It makes me question what's really going on. But my point is, at the end of the day, who cares?
I understand that.
Yeah,
but I do think that this is because we have at least like one like troll in there that's like who's like, oh, is that why lefties lost people? No, but hold on. You're not even making an argument. So you believe that Twitter got rid of a shadow ban that, again, was about the algorithm. It was never about followers up until literally this week anyway.
Right.
That magically produced new followers for the right. And somehow what? Because the shadow ban is gone. Leftists stopped following people that they followed previously. You don't even understand what argument you're making. Occam's razor, the simplest explanation is Twitter is now perceived by a lot of Americans as a right wing thing. It's not even reasonable to assume that because Elon Musk does not control it yet. But if that perception is out there, it is plausible that some right wingers who had been avoiding Twitter have now signed up. It's also, by the way, been in the news a ton for the last week. That could generate new attention. And some centrists and lefties now think, well, if this is going to be a right wing place, peace out, I'm gone. And they might well come back, but they easily could have left for at least a period. That is objectively the simplest explanation, but that doesn't feed into their victim complex. So they have to believe that shadowy employees at Twitter had been secretly making it so that none of the right wingers had any following, even though many do quite well on Twitter and on Facebook. This has been true for literally years. They have to ignore all of that because, again, they have to have that dichotomy where they're the best, the most popular, everyone agrees with them, everyone loves them. And also, we've been so like hampered. We've been so tied down in every way. We're the big victims. They have to have it both ways because all of politics is about emotions. It's about making them feel better about themselves.
Oh, I mean, look, the right wing engages in the oppression Olympics better than any other group, including people who are actually oppressed. The very people that they fight to oppress, the very people who apparently don't have their free speech rights at all, you know, valued or defended by the right wing. People like the transgender community who aren't even able to identify the way that they actually identify as people. But just putting that all aside, I just look at the right wing and it's a nonstop wine fest. And if they could just understand how much power they have, and look, to be frank, they do understand the power they have. It's not a surprise that Ben Shapiro is on the top 10 Facebook trending list multiple times on any given day.
Despite the shadow ban.
Right, it's just, and in terms of the infrastructure on the left versus the infrastructure on the right, the left wing doesn't have massive donors that just pour money into media companies. They might have investors, and investors invest expecting a return on their investment. It's very different from what you see on the right wing, where you have all of these wealthy donors who just shell out the cash, not as an investment, but essentially as a grant to do whatever you please with it, as long as you're carrying out the right wing propaganda.
Exactly, because it is literally an investment. All of this, despite the fact that 99% of the content the right wing produces has explicitly, purposefully nothing to do with economics. It is designed to produce a political system that delivers economic gains for the rich and for corporations. It is literally an investment in that. And by the way, the fact that, like, again, you can show them like time after time after time, the top 10 trending things on Facebook, 7 or 8 of them will be Republicans. And that shouldn't be surprising. Mark Zuckerberg ain't a leftist. But Twitter has already demonstrated that the bias has produced outsized gains for right wingers, and not just in the United States. If we jump ahead to this chart, you can see that across many different countries, there is an amplifying effect in the algorithm for right wingers. It's a little bit, you can see that it's, I don't know, 10, 20% positive for the right in the US and actually negative for Democrats in the US. But that's a relatively small effect compared to in some countries like Spain, Canada, and Germany. In some countries, by the way, like in Japan, all political content seems to be spread less readily. So the actual evidence shows, and this is not, hey, here's a piece of code in the algorithm that you can extrapolate. I mean, no, this is literally what happened with the tweets. No right winger will dispute this because they don't care about the actual evidence. They care about their victim complex. But there's another reason why right wing stuff tends to do well on places like Facebook, because it ain't about politics fundamentally. It is designed to be easily digestible stuff that plays into the most base primal negative emotions that people have. It produces an easy sugar high of feeling morally and genetically superior to everyone else in the world. It is implicitly made to stimulate feelings of superiority, anger, suspicion, all of that. So people spread it, they share it because they like that stuff. That's why it does well. Ben Shapiro is not going viral on Facebook for articles about the top marginal tax rate, okay? They're not interested in that. They're not covering what's going on. There's no foreign policy news or anything like that. It's all, here's a gay teacher from Indiana. Don't you feel like, aren't you worried about him possibly taking your kids from you or something? That's all they do. And so it's no wonder that it spreads. A lot of people are really small-minded and hateful, and they gobble that stuff up.
Yeah, that's a really great way of putting it. I also think that there's one thing that the right wing has that the left wing does not have, and that's a unified message. Mm-hmm. And they know how to stay on message. I think they also know how to exploit algorithms and SEO to ensure that their message is amplified as much as possible. On the left, I just think it's completely different, where there's just this weird infighting that we can't shake, constant suspicion of one another, constant like taking jabs at one another. And that ends up hurting the possibility of effectively mitigating the damage that's being done by this unified right wing and unified and well-funded right wing messaging.
Yeah, yeah, you're totally right. We're gonna move in one second, but I just have to say one other thing. The unity of message that you say, like I continually try to stress, people think, oh, well, on the on the left, and I'm talking broadly, not literally on the left, but everything that's not hard right. You have like independent channels like TYT and stuff like that. You have like CNN, you have MSNBC and stuff. Well, you know, on the right, they have like Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire and Fox News, same thing. There's diversity. No, there's not. No, there's not. MSNBC hates our guts. They despise us. They want us to fail. They don't want us to ever have any power. There is an actual disagreement. Do you ever question why it is that Fox News constantly puts the independent right wingers on their air? Because it ain't independent and it ain't different. It's the same thing. And now your follow up might be, well, no, that can't be true. They disagree sometimes about candidates. One might like Josh Mandel. One might like JD Vance. Yeah, and me and my buds might disagree about who should play Wolverine. That ain't about whether the movie's gonna make money in the end. That's all surface level stuff. Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, all of them, whether they identify as establishment or as populist, they all want the exact same outcome, and the outcome is economic dominance. That's what it is. All the culture war stuff, that's tactics, that's strategy. They don't care about that. They're not losing sleep. They want low taxes, no regulations on business. They can all agree on that. Everything else is cosplay.
Oh, you're so right. It was a fantastic rant. I really appreciated that because you're right about that. And I think what's also damaging about the fact that the so-called left cable news networks or whatever, like rejecting the progressive left, is that in terms of people's perceptions of what the left is, they think of corporate Democrats. And corporate Democrats have done so much damage to their local communities, to their lives, to their families, that they genuinely think like, oh, MSNBC and CNN represent the progressive left, when it couldn't be further than the truth. In fact, there's a reason why candidates like Bernie Sanders had this cross-party appeal. And it was because he genuinely spoke to the interests and the economic anxieties that Americans do feel. Corporate Democrats aren't offering anyone anything other than, you know, constant judgments, finger wagging, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Whereas the right does offer something. It's awful, it's terrible, but it takes they managed to take all of the frustration that people are feeling and they redirect it toward hating the most powerless people in society.
Yep.
And that is a dangerous cocktail that we're dealing with here. And unfortunately, the corporate Democrats are completely oblivious to it. And they just keep, you know, heading toward that tree going like 180 miles per hour.
Okay, very briefly, let's touch on this just because it's so weird. Let's jump into this next topic. Elon Musk has a strange and rapidly evolving relationship with the QAnon movement. And if you were thinking what could make either Elon Musk, topics about him, or QAnon stupider, no, we can always devolve. This is America. We're number one in dumb, baby. So the concerns about the accessibility on social media for people like in QAnon and all that, that has been one of the areas where Twitter has sometimes gotten rid of accounts. Now, there are still many people discussing QAnon on there, including people with large follower counts. But one of the beliefs amongst those in the QAnon community is that with him coming in, Elon Musk potentially taking control, this will now be a renaissance for them. And so you're starting to see, and researchers who look into misinformation and conspiracy theories and all that are seeing that they are beginning to reconsider their relationship with Elon Musk based on that. So there was these big shifts in follower counts and all that. We've been talking about that on the show. Now though, they're delving into specifics with Elon Musk. So yeah, you're seeing there's a lot of things happening. And that then produces, well, what might else happen? This might be a totally changed Twitter. So they're looking into things that Elon Musk has said, the QAnoners. So for instance, he sent out this tweet about Truth Social currently being Twitter and TikTok on the Apple Store, which is admittedly a weird thing to send out after you've bought for $44 billion. You're now saying, well, it's worse than Truth Social, which literally doesn't have anyone on it. And so you can take a look at this. This is the Patriot Voice, which is taking a look at the different Truth Social related tweets that Elon Musk has sent out and figuring out that based on the timestamps, there's about 17 minutes between the tweets. One of the tweets was 17 words long. It always comes out to 17. How many coincidences until it's mathematically impossible? Well, when you're picking and choosing which of those coincidences to even identify, you can really take control of that yourself. But anyway, many of them have now landed on this, the 17 minute thing. You can see Julian's rum there with it. And the interesting thing about this, about them trying to apply their like numerology to Elon Musk tweets is, up until recently, you might have not known this, but the QAnon movement did not like Elon Musk. They didn't trust him in part because he had been pictured with Ghislaine Maxwell. And remember, they're supposed to care about child predation and all that. This photo, by the way, which Ken Klippenstein has done a great job of constantly replying to Elon Musk with, is real out there. And Elon Musk is a well-connected billionaire, which they're supposed to be really suspicious of. But he might allow them to come back onto Twitter, Anna. And so they're starting to change all that. Like, sure, you may have hung out with Ghislaine Maxwell, but if I can get my tweets back, I'm willing to forgive and forget. What do you think?
Hey, tweets take priority over your concerns about, you know, perversion and abuse of children and all of that stuff, right? I mean, look, let's just keep it real. I want to keep it real about what QAnon really is. Okay, it's not a group of people who are concerned about children being abused. They don't care about that at all. Yeah. It's always been a defamation campaign against anyone they don't like in media or politics, and that's it. That's all it is at the end of the day. You know, they get passed off as lunatics because some of their theories sound like things that lunatics say, but really at the heart of this is just a campaign to viciously defame anyone they disagree with. Yeah. And that has spread to the Republican establishment. And it's fueling legislation on a state level. So, oh, we're worried about pedophilia. We're worried about grooming. We're worried about sex abuse. So we're going to censor teachers. Mm-hmm. We're going to ban critical race theory. We're going to ban certain math books. Like, that's all this is about.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, and it ties back to what we were saying before about why this stuff spreads. You are producing an ongoing feeling of like ultimate moral superiority over all these people. Everyone that you disagree with is a literal pedophile. they have sex with, and eat children. You are so much better than them, as better than them as anyone has ever been. That is appealing to some small-minded people. And by the way, I want to thank the audience. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, I just have one more thing to say. I mean, if they want to open those floodgates, why doesn't the left engage in that? Anyone we don't like is a pedophile. Why don't we do I don't really, I'm not interested in defaming people that I disagree with. I think that I can debate them and I think our ideas are better. Yeah. Their ideas are not better. So what they engage in is the worst kind of censorship, where they intimidate people by calling them all sorts of unfounded, insane things to scare them from speaking out. That's what they do. That is their bread and butter. That is the worst kind of censorship, by the way.
I agree.
And so, but my point is, if let's say the left wing did something, I mean, you see this happen in government all the time, where the Democrats will launch an investigation, but then they'll stop at the point where they would actually carry out consequences for the individuals they're investigating. And the reason why they won't carry out the consequences is because they're terrified that it will open the floodgates, and then the right wing will do all sorts of, you know, like hoax investigations and carry out insane consequences unfairly. They're always worried about, oh, we're going to open the floodgates. The right wing is going to use our tactics against us.
Which the right wing is going to do those sham investigations no matter what. They're already going to do it. But I did want to acknowledge someone in the audience said one of the reasons they focus on 17 is there's biblical implicate, like some sort of connotation of victory and stuff like that around 17. And someone else pointed out, like, yeah, there is actually a lot of coincidences of 17s popping up, like 17s in Elon Musk's tweets, all of Matt Gaetz's sexual partners are 17. It really does pop up in a lot of different places.
This asinine, I want to pay off student debt, is an insult to the senior citizens, to the people who pay taxes, to people who decide, you know, do I want to buy meat this week or pay for my medicine? That's hogwash. You got so many jobs, you got a great economy, let them work and pay off their bills just the way all of us do. That's the end of it.
Greg, you pay your bills on time.
You know it. Some decide pay early.
You're very, very prudent.
Yeah.
I just left that. We left that little bit on at the end with Greg Gutfeld to remind you that he's an absolutely horrendous comic. And the fact that he has gotten any success whatsoever on the right says a lot more about their low standards than his ability. But we want to focus on Jeanine Pirro there, because she is responding to the fact that the news came out this week that Joe Biden might be doing some student debt cancellation. In fact, right before we went live, Biden said he is not looking at canceling 50,000, but he is looking at making a decision in the next couple of weeks. So there is some, we don't know what that means. Maybe that means 100,000. 100,000 isn't 50.
Come on, John.
Seriously doubt it. But we'll get to that in one sec. I want to focus on Jeanine Pirro here, because she was freaking out at the prospect of this happening, and she knows how to deliver for her audience. Her audience being really old, selfish people who think the idea that someone else might be able to get through their life without experiencing every bit of suffering that they did is the biggest, like, moral. Like, it's unacceptable for that to happen. Here's what's interesting, though, about Jeanine Pirro. She thinks you guys should get out there and pay your debts. So if you owe 30, 40, 50,000, that's on you. You should pay that. You get a job. If you didn't want to pay for it, you shouldn't have gotten the debt in the first place. That's for you, not for her. Because when she had debts, she wasn't exactly running to pay them off. Did you know that she ran for Senate once? On the Republican ticket in New York. Now, she dropped out before the primary. Instead, she decided to run for attorney general and won the Republican nomination unopposed. Makes it a little bit easier. She lost to Andrew Cuomo in the general election. And you can't run for office without spending some money. It's best, though, if you spend other people's money. So her campaign eventually tried to dissolve itself without paying off $600,000 left in debts. And by the way, when I say that it tried to dissolve itself, it had been years and years and years that they had just refused to pay the debts. And then they tried to just dissolve the whole thing. And the reason that they said they should be allowed to do that is, and this is according to a tweet from 2019 by Dave Leventhal, obviously friend of the show, was they said, well, we don't have to pay the debts. The statute of limitations is passed. But it only passed because you guys refused to pay the debts. So you having $30,000 so that you have an education, so that you could do everything that people tell you you're supposed to do, you have to pay that off. $600,000 owed to a bunch of small businesses that delivered services and products for her campaign. Screw them. Jeanine Pirro doesn't have to pay that off, Anna.
It shows you how the right wing is so full of it when they claim that, you know, we don't need a social safety net. You need to pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Pulling yourself up by the bootstraps means getting an education so you can get a decent job and make decent money. But that requires you to take out an insane amount of loans that no person could pay off while they're in school. Like, the right wing loves to say, well, I was working while I was going to college and I was able to pay for my books and my tuition. Yeah, we live in a different world now. Yeah. And if you look at the cost of tuition and fees, I mean, even if you compare it to just plain old inflation, it has outpaced inflation in every other sector of the economy. And then when you have that debt, you are not able to do away with it if you file for bankruptcy, thanks to the bankruptcy bill that, of course, Joe Biden had championed and succeeded in passing. Mm-hmm. And so while they say, well, you took out the loans, you got to pay for it, they also will turn around and say that Donald Trump is a smart businessman because he went bankrupt six times. And when you go bankrupt as a businessman, you are able to do away with the loans that you owe to various lenders. So 100%, people great like point. Donald Trump, smart businessman, students that are drowning in student loan debt when they were just trying to better their lives and pick themselves up by the bootstraps, lazy bums, get a job and shut up. That's what you get from the right wing.
100%. You were irresponsible just to want to get an education. Whereas Jeanine Pirro was responsible, producing campaign ads, buying a couple $100,000 worth of Cabernet. These are necessary expenses, but you were being irresponsible. Anyway, earlier this month, she said to people, if you can't pay them, that's your problem. $600,000 in debt is your problem, actually. But anyway, she's not the only one that's freaking out. The prospect that the government might actually help you out instead of them. Mitt Romney tweeted, desperate polls call for desperate measures. Dems consider forgiving trillions in student loans. Other bribe suggestions, forgive auto loans, forgive credit card debt, forgive mortgages, and put a wealth tax on the super rich to pay for it all. What could possibly go wrong? And I think a lot of people responded the way Ken Klippenstein responded. Great point, Senator. Let's do it. Yeah, I think that sounds actually pretty good. By the way, like, the idea of like a debt jubilee is not a new thing, and it's got religious connotations. How is he unfamiliar with this? But anyway, other people clown on him too. You got Devin Nunes' cow saying, you have a car elevator. You don't get to opine on this. And then Representative Jim Jordan tweeted, canceling student loan debt is stupid. But yeah, why would he care? Why would he care, Anna?
Right. And look, the other thing I just want to quickly draw attention to is the fact that these are people who have gotten incredibly rich from taking positions that help enrich themselves. So they're disconnected from reality, because for Jeanine Pirro, it's like, yeah, just get hired by some right-wing rag where right-wing donors will funnel money right straight to your pockets as long as you say exactly what they want you to say. And then you'll be able to pay off your student loans. What's the problem? What's the problem? Just get elected into Congress so you can use insider information to trade individual stocks and outperform the stock market. What's the problem? That's what they're really thinking.
Exactly. So if you're watching as a conservative, those are rich ass people telling you that you should never receive any relief for your debt. But have fun watching their show. Really in your best interest. Anyway, if you're watching on a linear platform or listening on the podcast, thank you for joining us. If you're on the members app, Twitch, YouTube, a bunch of other places, though, we do have more news to get to. So we're gonna take a quick couple minute break, but don't go anywhere, because Anna Kasparian and I will be back after this. Ray Turner sent in a super chat to say, just back from the post office, John. Dragon Daddy Ty airmailed. Hope you like it. Also, hi, Anna. Love seeing you and John presenting.
John, we have good rapport.
We do.
People are saying Anna and John, they have the best rapport.
Yeah. Massive dumps of rapport. Big rapport. Huge. Varden says, TYT has a baller army, but John, you have what seems like countless dragons that rally to you. well, we need an army. That's the infantry. We need the dragons, which are the Air Force. JR needs to start like the Navy. I don't know what that would be. Maybe some sort of tortoise. I like big turtles, and I cannot lie. Hendo, Bendo says, John, you're a stud muffin. Love the Dragon Squad. Oh, geez. Oh, geez. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.